Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Chad and I are chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog that I will post a link to below. Mark, let's start off by recapping the Fed minutes. I know, not usually all that interesting, but these Fed minutes came out and I think surprised a few people in the sense that the Fed more or less showed that they're talking about tapering, and tapering could very likely come this year, 2021. Now, again, that all came out of the minutes. Everyone was waiting for the Jackson Hole announcement or press conference for Powell to maybe announce some of this, but the minutes beat him to it. Mark, what does that mean moving forward here for the Fed? Do you think we're actually going to get a taper? What were your takeaways from those minutes?
Yeah, sure. No, I think that the Federal Reserve sort of confirmed what the market already expected. And I say that partly because there was not much of a reaction in the short end interest rate instruments like the Fed funds futures or the Eurodollar futures. I think that the Federal Reserve, I think you're right, they confirmed that there's been a shift in thinking. That up until now, the Fed officials have been saying we need stronger data, more data, before we could taper it. Now I think the Fed is saying, as long as there's no downside surprises to our expectations, that we'll plan on tapering this year. My sense is that, like I say, the market took this in stride. You're right, I think many people were looking for this kind of hint to be coming from Jackson Hole. And I think next week, at the Jackson Hole symposium, Powell will just confirm that this is the evolution that the Federal Reserve is moving in. I think it's dangerous if the Federal Reserve is just going to be like Lucy in that Charlie Brown strip where it keeps removing the football. I don't think the markets will take that very well. I think that the markets are counting on the Fed to taper, and I think the markets is really going even a bit further than the Fed is. Remember in the June FOMC meeting that 7 out of the 18 Fed officials thought there'd be a rate hike in 2022. The market has a hike priced in. The market is saying that it's sort of ahead of the Federal Reserve. The market's saying that the Federal Reserve doesn't quite know it yet, but they're going to raise rates before the end of next year.
Well, Mark, just on the topic of rates raising, if the Fed does start to taper and does start that laying out that timeline, it's going to raise the rates in the 10-year and the 30-year. And if that happens, there may be some pressure in the market. You know, what kind of a move do you think would be such a big pressure that we get near a taper tantrum? And how does the Fed avoid doing that when they start their tapering process?
Yeah, no, I think that's important. I mean, you know, that taper tantrum was perhaps, I mean, it's not necessarily a part of the process. I mean, we haven't been through this process of ending QE so many times, right? So we have limited experience to draw on. My sense is that the market, so we're talking about two like reaction functions. One is how the Federal Reserve responds, but then how does the market respond to the Federal Reserve's response? And I'm not sure that this is a big surprise. I think this is what the important point of Powell keep repeating, that he will give the market advance notice about the tapering. And I think this is to try to avoid that. And, you know, this is what the point I'd raise, too, is we know about, obviously, demand is strong. We can see this in the auctions. Private sector demand is strong. In fact, we had last week the strongest 10-year note reception that we've had by some metrics. And remember what happens, too. So, as you know, the U.S. government has been spending money like it's growing on trees. And for the first time, so what the borrowing means, it's got to borrow more every quarter. Well, at the November refunding, so it's still a couple months off, the Federal Reserve or the Treasury has already hinted that it will reduce the amount of money it needs to borrow, which sort of makes sense as the emergency passes, as the programs get funded, and we've got some fiscal cliffs approaching as well. The Treasury is going to need sell less bonds just at that moment in time where the Federal Reserve wants to buy less bonds.
So that's perfect. That's great timing, it sounds like, for the Fed. But Mark, when it comes to this whole concept of tapering. We've had a lot of discussions with people discussing the velocity of money, and also heard that through the repo market, the Fed is actually pulling some liquidity out of the market, and we haven't seen necessarily a major drop in the U.S. markets. Now, again, a lot of easy money that's put out into people's hands or made available does land in the markets. Do you see any correlation between what's been happening in the repo market to some foresight into what a taper might look like as well?
Yeah, no, here's what I think about this reverse repo that the Fed does. Where are these banks getting the money to put into this? It's $1 trillion a day. Where are they getting this money? Well, partly the money is being created by the Federal Reserve every time that they buy securities. So one is really, we really got to distinguish between like wholesale money, what the banks have, and what you and I might have. So I think that there's a big, sharp disconnect there, whereby, of course, the banks have excess reserves and not enough places to put it. And now the Federal Reserve has offered to pay banks more on their excess reserves, as well as their required reserves. They've been calling them the bank deposits at the Federal Reserve. They're paying them more than the banks can get on a six-month T-bill, risk-free loan to the government. They get 4 basis points in 6 months, annualized. The Federal Reserve gives them 5 overnight. So I think that, you know, what's happened then is that some banks who weren't participating in the Fed's reverse repo operations because they didn't need to now see it as an attractive way to manage liquidity. So I wouldn't say the Fed is taking liquidity from the market. I think the Fed's provided tons of liquidity to the market, and the market's found a small place, $1 trillion a day, to put it. But in general, I think that the money market's not really the main focus. I think that to think about the tapering, I'd still be focusing on the idea that where we are relative to the Fed's targets. Inflation, they say we've met. The labor market target, they haven't met that, but they've approached it. And we've got to be thinking about what's the Fed going to be seeing. What does the Fed know at Jackson Hole? What will Powell know? And I think the Fed's models are going to be a lot like the market's models because a lot of people from the Fed leave the Fed and join the markets and bring their models with them. So we're all using the same general models. And they'll show you that the next batch of jobs data should be another strong report, something around 750,000. Which is a little bit down from that over 900,000, but it still be 750,000, still above this year's average, and still a very strong number, especially if accompanied with other elements like a decline in the unemployment and underemployment rates, and importantly, a pickup in the participation rate.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of balls in the air here, but if the Fed is going to try to get things quote-unquote normal again, it's, you know, leading into a tapering of their emergency, what was supposed to be emergency at least, funding of the bond market, considering the rate hikes, looking at the job growth, inflation's at a reasonable pace, and we've also seen, Mark, the U.S. dollar strengthen this week. It was back up to 93.50 again. So overall, on the global stage, the United States economy seems to, and the central bank policy seems to be jiving with people, and the markets, even though they've dipped, have been bought right back. So what do you make of the stronger dollar and the U.S. economy positioned against the European economies and some of the Asian economies?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. The dollar is like king, and it's a call I've had wrong this year. I thought that, I recognize, of course, the U.S. would taper, would adjust policy before the Bank of Japan, before the ECB. But I didn't know if that would be good enough because I thought that the U.S. is also having record trade deficits in addition to the large budget deficit. I thought we would need higher interest rates to attract money into the U.S. But I recognize, of course, that in the near term, dollar is probably going to go up further. I am concerned that, that it's getting a bit rich. And that's what I'm looking at as we close out the week. I'm looking at the Bollinger Bands and see a couple of currencies trading beyond the two standard deviations from the 20-day moving average. It's been a big move. There's been a couple of currencies, like the dollar index was up 4 days, actually up 5 days in a row, and now looking like it could be putting in a little bit of a of a bearish candlestick pattern as it comes off here, profit taking ahead of the weekend. And that's what I find often happens. You know, we typically will review the price action, and on Fridays, you could get some position adjusting that's not really significant. And you think about the dollar index up 4 days in a row, and then a little bit of profit taking today. It's a little bit early to call it a top. I think that the next important level in the euro is close to 116. That's the level that we were at on the night of the election when the Chinese were rumored to have a large option down there on the euro. The currency, I think that's the two currencies that really strike me as incredulous this week is one is the Canadian dollar. You know, I don't think it's any fault of Canada that the oil prices have dropped sharply or commodity prices generally have dropped. I don't think it's Canada's problem of Canada per se that stock markets wobbled, and that also seemed to take the Canadian dollar down. But it was quite a move, and at one point the Canadian dollar was off more than 3% for the week. So Canada, despite a relatively robust economy, we saw that with the strong retail sales figures today. So Canadian dollar weakness surprised me. So if I think that the U.S. dollar is going to pull back, Canada is one that I think should have a good bounce when it happens. And the other currency that surprised me is Norway. Norway might be one of the few currencies, major currencies, weaker than the Canadian dollar this week. And this is despite the central bank underscoring that it's still on track to raise interest rates next month. So despite these positive developments in Canada, Canadian dollar suffers, partly I think as a risk-off, and partly related to commodities. And Norway suffers for the same reasons, despite the central bank preparing to hike rates.
Mark, let's also talk about commodities, because commodities broadly have been weak. We know that precious metals, especially gold, has been going through a long correction now, about 1 year. But the base metals, those have started correcting. And now even oil has started correcting fairly quickly. Now, you can make the argument that some of these commodities maybe got ahead of themselves, much like some other sectors, but the dollar is being blamed as pressuring these commodities. But that's not the whole story, is it? What do you think is really the story or all the factors that are pushing commodities lower?
Yeah, I focus on this, right? When it comes to commodities, right, you've got to think about both supply and demand. And I think the big shock has taken place on the demand side. And here I think of three or four things, big things. One is China. And I say China begins commodity stories often with China because they are really the marginal and biggest buyer, really, of many of those industrial metals. They're the world's biggest importer of oil. And they, as a factory of the world, they have a big demand for a lot of commodities. And so one of the things is that in order to help reach their pollution targets, China's got to curb their steel production. They promised to cut their steel output this year, but they didn't really do it in the first half, so that means they're going to do more in the second half. And that has driven down iron ore prices. And it's been an amazing sharp move. Roughly, iron ore prices have been almost halved in the last 3 months. And of course, the knockoff effect of equities would be that it would hit some miners as well. But then the other factor, and this might affect other things besides iron ore, including we've seen a drop in copper prices this week to four-month lows, is that there's talk that the U.S. infrastructure is likely to be smaller than what was passed in the Senate. And following up with that, I think you get not only China coming back on steel, the Fed tapering, the smaller U.S. infrastructure, but COVID, you know, maybe for us in the U.S. and in Canada, maybe parts of Western Europe, we could think about we should just live with COVID now, but that's a luxury that a lot of countries that don't have high vaccine rollout don't have. Give you an example, you know, New Zealand found one case and they had a lockdown, national lockdown. So, of course, now they found more cases. It's sort of like cockroaches. You can't imagine how a virus is going to survive by itself. One person has it, found to be another person. And this affected their ability, the RBNZ's ability to raise interest rates. But COVID is this. So you're getting more lockdowns. Australia, Japan extending its emergency. In the U.S., we have 5 states that are maxing out on their ICU availability. So I put the ban, and you see this in some of these high-frequency reports about, say, I think Goldman Sachs had one about air miles being flown. And you've seen a big drop in Europe, the U.S., as well as Asia. So I think these kind of factors, I think that's what we saw this past week. You know, at first, when it looked like the U.S. oil inventories fell by roughly 3 times what people expected, that was going to be, that should be bullish for oil. U.S. oil inventories, lowest level since January 2020. But once we saw the rise in gasoline inventories, we concluded that meant rise in gasoline inventories was a comment or insight into gasoline demand. And so that's why I think oil prices have continued to sell off. And oil prices, as we finish up this week, I have oil, September West Texas futures contract down about 8.7% for the week. That's almost $6. Put it in perspective for you. This puts it at about $62.50. At the end of July, we were just below $74.
All right, Mark, we're going to wrap it up here. Sounds like a lot of factors actually pressing the commodities lower, but there are some wild cards out there, especially being this COVID and the new variants. But yeah, I don't know. You're right. Some countries it's easier to say that we just need to live with, but I don't know. There's still a lot of question marks out there, but either way, you look at the trends and right now commodities are getting pushed lower and it looks like the Fed is going to try some sort of taper this year. We'll see if they actually follow through with that. Mark, as always, great chatting with you, buddy. Thanks for taking time on this Friday. We'll chat again soon. You have a great weekend.
Thanks. Good luck, guys.